This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Her poems explore everything from parenting to social inequality to the environment and more. She has won a wide array of honors, from Guggenheim Fellowship to a finalist for a National Book Award. She's Chancellor of the Academy of American Poets and a professor at the University of Michigan. Now, Linda Gregerson is out with her very first collected volume. It's titled Prodigal, New and Selected Poems, 1976 to 2014. Welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
This collection brings us 10 new poems and then 50 poems pulled from some 40 years' worth of writing.
Yeah.
I could see your face. How hard was that to decide which poems were going to be in this collection?
Well, that's a very kind question.
They're all your babies.
It was not as brutal as I thought it would be. For one thing, I have some brilliant readers. I have a couple of dear friends who are also poets and who were more than two, actually, who were very generous with their time and read through the manuscript a couple of times and made suggestions about this could go, that could go, but what about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, I'm deeply, deeply indebted to them. The problem varied, of course, from volume to volume. There were some volumes where it was painful to leave out certain poems. And my first volume was a different problem because it was written long ago. It was written before I made what I consider a sort of formal or stylistic breakthrough. Mm-hmm. And I was very anxious that I'd go back and couldn't find anything I thought worthy of inclusion. And I was not dismayed when I went back. I was, in fact, pleasantly surprised. Not that the poems are what I would hope them to be entirely, but that a lot of the thinking and the concerns and some issues of technique, figurative imagination and mm-hmm. juxtapositions were actually in place. I just hadn't found the right pacing.
And that comes with doing and doing and doing and doing.
Thank you.
because as I thought of reviewing a lifetime of work, and I know if I heard some of my early broadcasts from like 1979 or 1980, I think there'd be a huge cringe factor for me. But it seems as if you could look at those early works and go, yeah, she did all right for a newbie.
Well, or rather, there were things she
yes.
was after things that I still care about.
Ah.
So that, you know, was reassuring.
When you were choosing what was going to go into Prodigal, were there certain themes that were a parameter that you said, I want it to kind of have this narrative arc, or what was
it? You know, that's a very good question. And my friend David Baker was especially helpful on this. I do include autobiographical material, especially things having to do with my daughters. And in some poems, they are infants, and in other poems, they are grown young women. And it does give readers a handhold, I think, affording some legibility about the human being who wrote these poems. When I first started writing, I was very, very wary of autobiography. I was terrified of sentimentality mm-hmm. and terrified of seeming stupid. And there are things I like to think that the poems are capable of being ambitious, intellectually, formally, thematically, even in terms of the ethical and political subjects they are willing to entertain. But I don't want them to be abstruse. I don't want them to be at arm's length. I don't want them to hold readers hostage to something that feels punitive or like work.
Well, let's get a sample
of
your work. And you talk about the fact that you do share moments with your daughters. And you also share a deep awareness and concern for the environment. And that, to me, is displayed in one of your new poems, Sostenuto. Would you read that for us?
Thank you. Yes, certainly. Sostenuto. Night. What they have of it at altitude like this and filtered air. What was in my lungs just an hour ago is now in yours. There's only so much air to go around. They're making more people, my father would say, but nobody's making more land. when my daughters were little and played in their bath. They invented a game whose logic largely escaped me, something to do with the disposition of bubbles and plastic ducks, until I asked them what they called it. They were 2 and 4. The game was oil spill. Keeping the ducks alive, I think, was what you were supposed to contrive, as long as you could make it last. Up here, in borrowed air, in borrowed bits of heat, in costly cubic feet of steerage, we're a long-held note, as when the choir would seem to be more than human breath could manage. In the third age, says the story, they divided up the earth, and that was when the goddess turned away from them.
That is Linda Gregerson reading from her collected volume, Prodigal, New and Selected Poems, 1976 to 2014, one of the 10 new poems. And then you have this collection culled from 4 decades' worth of work, 50 other poems. And you actually invented your own poetic form. You don't work in traditional meters or sonnets. And for those who don't understand the workings of poetry, explain to us how you've done this.
You bet. I love nothing more. I like to think of those traditional rhyme and meter where it's a beat, you know, whose woods these are, I think I know, his house is in the village, though, he will not see me, and so forth, as received form. There are certain kinds of patternings of language, of soundscape, rhyme often, and sometimes determined length that we expect to see in so-called traditional verse, which is still, by the way, alive and very well, and there are superb practitioners. I know that there is another terminology. Sometimes free verse is what we call it, and there was a period when that was seemed the helpful formula. I don't think it's so helpful anymore because no verse is really free. Poetry is about resistance. I think what distinguishes it from other forms of writing is that it seeks to increase the resistance at some level, some arbitrary bondage that the poem has to, that the language has to make its way through. That might just be nothing more than lineation. When you look at a page of writing, of print, you quickly, everyone quickly decides, oh, that's prose, oh, that's poetry.
Yes.
And you do it based on whether there's some white space on the right-hand margin. And the white space means that it was not a software program or a typesetter who decided where the line breaks. It was the author. And at the very minimal level, that is a kind of decision-making that sets up what I'm calling resistance, because there's another thing going on in language always when we speak to one another, which is syntax, the sort of sequence of words that go together. And in English, we have certain expectations, most often subject, verb, object.
Yes.
And syntax and lineation in poetry are two kinds of contracts of expectation. And they can agree to be friends and go along. And the end of a line can coincide with a break in the unit of syntax. Or they can duke it out. They can resist one another. And we call that enjambment. But that gives us another kind of rhythm, another kind of torque, another kind of thinking to do, and another kind of pacing that's not just musical. It turns out it starts influencing the pacing at which our emotions happen.
Powerful, powerful. What do you feel, Linda, is the role of poetry and of poets?
Oh, an easy question, right? Goodness, where shall I begin? In spatial terms, this world is pretty overwhelming. We hear every day news that is simply overwhelming in its scale, most often about suffering in the world.
Yes.
Suffering experienced by other people in numbers we cannot get our heads around. And we can do several things about that. Most often we deal as best we can and become a little numb and do coping strategies. Well, it behooves us to take in that information at a different level. And one of the things poetry can do, not by preaching, please, no, never, by sort of feeding something to a reader who's regarded as simply passive, but by trying to tangle with these things, can grant it for a moment the human scale. And I think that is immensely urgent work. To use the metaphor of time, mm-hmm. we're all so dizzied. We talk about being time is moving so quickly. We can hardly think to think. We're multitasking. We're wildly overcommitted. And it all happens in a rush. But in much longer ago than we may sometimes imagine, the bafflement of time was on people's minds. St. Augustine writes in the 4th century about how ungraspable time is, that that the future, we talk about what's to come, but it's not really there and we don't know anything about it. We feel we have a firmer grasp on the past, but the past is no longer here. And so he thinks maybe the present will be the way we can look at it. But in fact, the present is tissue thin. The minute we say the present, it's gone. It's actually the most elusive phenomenon. I think the fact that poetry, it actually does take time to read. It requires us to slow down. It requires us to often to establish artificially, perhaps, a space of quiet. It can maybe once in a while, maybe very rarely, maybe not many times in a lifetime for either the writer or the reader, grant us the feeling of being in the present tense, or at best having the feeling of having been there when it was the present tense.
Capturing that tissue, that
yeah.
tissue
yeah.
moment right there.
That I was alert. I didn't sleep through it all.
Will you share one more with us, please?
Yes, of course.
This one is called Font. Tell
makes
us a bit about
some,
this. Yeah.
yeah, make some reference to the new media. I'm, as everyone who knows me, especially my family, can testify, a very serious contestant for most incompetent human being on the planet at everything to do with computers. So when I can make it seem as though I actually know how to manage them, when I can refer to a download as I do in this, but I feel as though I'm being terribly up to the minute. I read this poem recently in New York at a gathering of the Academy of American Poets, and there was a sort of big audience, a ton of us reading, and I gave that preface, and then I said, and the title of this poem is Font, which of course is a very, very old-fashioned term. And in that room, you know, 300 people burst into laughter, which I wasn't expecting. But yes, it is meant to be slightly ironized. Okay, so Font. At the foot of the download, anchored among the usual flotsam of ads, this link to plasticsexpress.com, who for a fraction of the retail price can solve my underground drainage woes, which tells me the software has finally run amok. Because the article, you see, recounts the rescue from a sewage pipe of baby 59, 5 pounds, placenta still attached in Zhejiang province, where officials, even as I read, are debating the merits of throwing the mother in jail. Communal toilet, father nowhere to be found. The gods, in their mercy, once could turn a frightened girl to water or a shamed one to a tree, but they no longer seem to take our troubles much to heart. And so the men with hacksaws do their gentle best. Consider the infant shoulders, consider the lids. And this one child among millions, delivered a second time to what we still call breathable air, survives to pull the cords of sentiment and commerce. Don't make the poem too sad, says Megan. Thinking at first, we both of us think, the child must be a girl or otherwise damaged, thus This part she doesn't say. Like her, who is the ground of all I hope and fear for in the world. Who'll pay? Or as the hawkers on the pavement used to put it, what do you lack? The download comes with pictures, too, of workmen, wrenches, bits of shattered PVC, and one for whom the whole of it, commotion, cameras, IV needle in the scalp, is not more strange than ordinary daylight. Welcome, number 59. Here's milk in a bottle, and here's a nearly human hand.
That's poet Linda Gregerson. And before we wrap up, it strikes me that so many of the people, and you say a lot of this is autobiographical, there's so much struggle that these people face. And I thought of that word prodigal. Are you the prodigal? Are the people in the poems the prodigal?
You know, prodigal, I hope it will not seem, at least after people dip into the book a little bit, to be in any exclusive way referring to that biblical tale. Prodigal, of course, means it's kind of an equivalent for spendthrift. And the reason we remember the prodigal son is that he spent his inheritance and did away with it. And I guess the extravagance of what we have been given on this planet, the extraordinary bounty and beauty of nature, the means to live, the incredible intelligence of the biosphere, the bodies we inhabit that do this incredible work on our behalf that we couldn't possibly do on purpose. It's meant to be a celebration and tribute to that bounty, that prodigality at the hand of God or nature, but also, of course, to the very sobering vista of our own spendthrift ways and the danger we have brought upon ourselves and upon the world that sustains us.
Well, a remarkable collection, Prodigal, New and Selected Poems, 1976 to 2014, from the Chancellor of the Academy of American Poets and Professor at the University of Michigan, Linda Gregerson. It was a pleasure to meet you. Thank you so much for being with us on Stateside, Linda.
You are very welcome.